Boom. Now we're back. Big time clap after a bad last episode. Welcome back to another episode of Teeing It Up with CNV. I'm your host, Connor, as always, with the V of CNV. Vladdy, what's going on, man? Week two in college, week one in the NFL. It's prime time, Teeing It Up season.
I'm doing good. Kind of came back from Florida this past weekend, had a great time down there. And then you mentioned the football is absolutely in full swing, both the collegiate and the professional. We have very good news to kind of present from our local teams on all fronts. But we'll get there. Outside of that, it's just good to kind of quote unquote be back. I mean, you've got games Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And just as the season progresses, it'll get better and better as kind of the better matchups come up. You and I were just talking last week, not a lot of high stakes outside of Michigan, Texas. This upcoming week, probably worse, but I know this all started with how am I? I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm just chugging along through the fall. It is very exciting once you kind of get these seasons. And I definitely lose that buzz, especially with college football around like mid-October, usually when state goes to shit, to be honest. But for now, like that month of September, even though they're kind of the worst games, I still have that buzz around any football on my television, including the college games that were. I was also out of town this weekend, got to take in some college football as well, for the second straight week. So yeah, can't complain on personal fronts at all. So let's get into it. We're gonna start with college. We'll start where we usually do with the hometown team, or at least our alumnus, the Michigan State Spartans are 2-0. A game that in my 5-7 prediction, I might have to bump up to 6-6 now.
Hey, we're going
Because
eight
that's
and
when I had
four.
us losing a
We're
road
going eight
game
and four.
going 8-4. I don't know if you can say that. I mean, it's an ugly win. But it's a Big Ten win on the road. That's all you can talk about. I really only got to watch like the fourth quarter of this one. But it seemed like from what I saw in the very least, and I saw the big play. And what he could be in that bomb of a touchdown he threw to Marsh at the end of the game. But I also saw a stat that alarmed me, and that's three interceptions. It's his second multi-interception game in as many games. And it seems like we're going to be playing this tale for most of his freshman year, and that you're going to have to live with the good, with the bad if you want to get the good out of this guy. He's a physical talent. I think he's shown that for 2 weeks, but it's very, very raw, and I think you've put it in best terms in a text I kind of glanced over and then read the next morning again that I made me chuckle out loud. The Aiden Childs method is to make sure the ball doesn't hit the ground, whether that's for your team or the other team catching it. The ball doesn't hit the ground much with Aiden Childs. I mean, we can get to Maryland. The quarterback play. I know Tuilaleʻi was no NFL quarterback. He's playing in the CFL right now, but. Big time downgrade at that position. They struggled kind of throughout that, especially towards the end. They kind of could string things together, which you can credit Michigan State secondary, or you can credit that to bad quarterback play. I'd kind of do a little of both. But a surprising win in a game you were 7, 8 point underdogs. So.
It was not a surprising win. I told you it was going to happen.
For
No,
some.
jokes aside, this was the absolute perfect follow-up performance to the disaster against FAU. And that doesn't mean perfect because we beat them 100 to nothing. It means perfect because we saw the next steps of this team that we needed to see. Let's start with Aiden Childs. You talk about the three interceptions. I guess I'll start there. The first one was brutal. Just completely airmails his defender, who was pretty open and could have been hitting stride for a little bit of yards after catch. Throws it about 6 feet over his head, right into a safety's arms. Brutal interception. The second one, and I forget the exact order. There was one interception was weird because like he kind of got just like tackled, and somehow the ball never hit the ground, and they just called it a pick. It was the one of those interceptions was whack. Not that it couldn't have been a strip sack in the end of it. It still counts as a turnover. But the second or third where the tight end wide open in the end zone, that to me was also horrific. You had him, no one within 15 yards on either side, whether it be a corner underneath, a safety off kind of towards the middle of the field. And I think the tight end looked around like, oh my God, how am I this open? He's got his arms in the air. Childs throws it, and I don't know. He just misjudged, the touch isn't there yet. I don't know what it was, but it was a horrific miss where the tight end didn't have a chance at the ball. Once again, right at the defender who comes back. And that was a play that should have given us a touchdown, so kind of lost some points there. That was the bad. And unlike the first game against FAU, where we had multi turnovers and sorry, and then some ugly, ugly statistics out the rest of it, we had some good. He was able to find receivers in stride today, or today, this past week. He was able to hit the deep ball. You mentioned the Nick Marsh touchdown. There was another one too, Montori Foster, I believe it was, where once again kind of took the lid off the secondary. He put the ball in places where his receivers could make the catches, and they delivered as well. Well, I'll get to them. They played better too, which is nice. So I think that was a massive step up for him. Kind of as you said, it's not perfect, and it's going to be a learning curve. He's 18, but he showed me the signs that needed to be there, especially after that bad performance, that he can bounce back, that the team can bounce back, that he can be a leader, and that he can be a very good starting quarterback for Michigan State over the rest of his career here. To talk about maybe some of the other things with this team, I think the running game was maybe above average. If you will, there were a couple of longer carries that one Nate Carter broke where he just kind of didn't have the top speed to take it to the end zone, where certain other running backs just absolutely would have been gone. And then the K'Ron Lynch Adams guy, he runs with a lot of pop. He looks really fun, and I do like kind of the 1-2 punch that they have going. Talk about the receivers. Nick Marsh with kind of his that's just that was his coming out party. 9 receptions, 185 yards, the touchdown. And he's doing that as a true freshman. He is also a kid with Aiden Childs. They're going to grow together, hopefully, and we're going to see what they can do with it. But Marsh obviously plays great. The rest of the guys, you didn't have ugly drops like you did against FAU. You didn't have just kind of a Mickey Mouse performance. So I guess maybe the last thing I want to mention is not only were the throws good, I think the situations were too. You know, you're in the fourth quarter, down 7 with 5 minutes left, and boom, bomb. Then you get the ball back and you lead a drive, kill off the game, kill off the clock, and set yourself up for a Jonathan Smith, for a Jonathan Kim kick to end the game. I thought this was, again, the perfect response for the team. Moving to the defensive side, you mentioned how the defense looked pretty good against kind of a weaker Maryland quarterback. They actually looked pretty leaky, in my opinion, in the first half. They did clean it up, and I don't know if it was just as the maybe they made some adjustments at halftime and got a little better. But in the first half, there were a couple times where receivers were open over the top, or we kind of just lost what we were doing on the defensive side. But as the game progressed and as the drives became more and more crucial, the Spartans defense did what they needed to do. The run defense was great. I think I was kind of staring at box scores. Each of the Maryland rushers had, I think, less than 3 or 4 yards per carry on average. That's good news. Like you said, they tightened up late in the game on the pass defense side. They were able to get a pick of their own. And the only thing I can really say negative is the secondary loses their third player to a long-term injury, and Michigan State has now lost 5 players overall in 2 games to long-term injuries. I do not understand what it is with us in injuries, but it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I guess the only thing I'll add was it's still so nerdy. You mentioned how you set it up on that game-winning drive. To have, I think it was like a 41-yarder or something like that, but to have Jonathan King go up there for the game is still so nerve-wracking that it felt so satisfying just to see him make one for once, because he's had his day here at Michigan State as a kicker.
Yep. I guess kind of if you want to look at overall
Yeah.
game on Saturday against whatever the hell Prairie View is,
An FCS team.
oh, perfect. I was actually gonna ask if they were D2, but good for them. Beat the shit out of them. Get your starters out of the game early so you don't go lose starters number 6 and 7 of the season,
Yep.
and get yourself in a position to go to Boston College and go 4-0. That's really all you can do from an outlook standpoint.
Yeah, nothing else to add. Moving into the rest of college football, wasn't the greatest slate. I think there's probably two things we need to talk about, and then we'll kind of go into, or at least I'll go into some general winners and losers outside of that. The first, we'll start with the one at noon. The biggest game of the week, Michigan and Texas. The Longhorns go in and assert their dominance. A game I didn't get to watch. I actually got sandbagged by some friends. I was in a different stadium at Penn State, and I couldn't get the ESPN app, but I could get texts in the stadium. And so I had a friend ask, update me with texts. And as I'm walking out of the stadium, he goes, "Oh my God, Michigan." He's telling me it's 31-17, 31-24. And then he goes, "Oh my God, Michigan just won the game 38-31 on a last second touchdown. How do they always do this?" And so I went around telling people in the stadium around me that Michigan had won, only to get back outside the stadium and see that they got absolutely mollywopped from start to finish. And this, I'll kind of let you go on what the actual game was, but a real statement win for a Longhorns program, for Quinn Ewers. And kind of, I think, it's hard to like say, like, sound the alarms in Ann Arbor when you just won a national championship and you lost to what's probably the second or third best team in the country right now. But I think there's a reasonable argument to sound that this could get bad ugly just this season for the Wolverines.
Yeah, I'm going to maybe not go as far there just because I think that
I said a reasonable argument.
Yeah,
I said
no,
I'm not.
I mean, I guess the schedule gets tough and we'll see what happens when they play the likes of a USC and an Oregon. Because those two teams have questions of their own, if you will. But I just think that the defense is still too good for your average team to really kind of, let's say, get killed or lose games that
That
maybe
ain't the side of the ball I'm worried about.
okay, that's fine. But what I'm saying is against Texas, you're gonna get run over anyway. And I'll get into this game. Let me do that and then we can debate this.
Okay.
This Texas team is loaded. And they have, at least in this particular instance, they had the absolute perfect game plan. And that was on obvious blitz situations where Michigan's new defensive coordinator, Wink Martindale, he blitzes for fun. He blitzes twice on every play, he would blitz twice every play if he was legally allowed to with 22 guys. And Texas knew that was coming, and they just utilized it against him. They believed enough in their offensive line to give Quinn Ewers just enough time to get some little screen pass quickly out there, away from the pressure, and get their playmakers into space. Then they sat there and watched Mason Graham move around on the offense, on the defensive line. Sometimes he was inside, sometimes he was outside. And then, once again, it was pretty simple. Is Mason Graham on the interior? If yes, run some kind of passing play, run some kind of quick pass, get them out into space where they felt they had the advantage. Is Mason Graham on the outside? Is he going to line up at defensive end? Which I don't know why you would do that, but he did. And Texas was able to identify it very early on, very quickly. And they just hammered Michigan through the right down the middle, right behind the center and the guards, and right away from Mason Graham, who's probably the best defensive tackle in America. And at every single attempt, they had Michigan's number on the offensive side. It was incredible. And part of that's play calling. The other part, which we have to talk about, is Quinn Ewers. He was sensational. Poise in the pocket, the ability to move in the pocket to his own advantage, whether that be to open up passing lanes or to take off himself. Not forcing anything, making good reads, finding second, third options on a play, getting the ball out quickly when he needed to. Quinn Ewers was sensational.
The next quarterback for the New York Giants. That's what
I was about to. I'm about to sit here and talk about it. Last year, if he had decided to come out, he probably would have been in that Penix, JJ, Bo Nix tier of quarterback, and
maybe even later.
And maybe the fact that there was now four of them that all kind of had options, maybe that would have pushed all of them down the draft, because to an extent there is a supply and demand aspect of the NFL draft when it comes to certain classes. And he came back. He looks incredible. He is probably one of, if not the Heisman frontrunner for September. And I know we don't get to give the awards out in September, but he's looked every bit of the part. And he is going to play his way into the number one pick conversation, because He plays the most important position. And the only two other quarterbacks who have a pulse or one and a half, because I don't believe in one of them, are Carson Beck and Shedeur Sanders. And
Draft eligible.
yeah,
Draft eligible.
I mean,
That kid in Tennessee is going to have something to say about that.
oh, Nico Iamalata, wherever his name is. Yeah, he looks fun, but let's get to that as well. Let me finish the Texas thing, and then
Yeah.
we can get to the rest of college football, because I actually think that's a very valid thing. He's going to sit there. He's going to compete with Carson Beck and Shedeur Sanders for the number one pick, and he might make himself a gargantuan payday. You mentioned on the defensive side for Texas, and then obviously this leads into the Michigan struggles. They
Yeah.
were great, and I think that obviously Michigan, like a team that I'm going to get to in the NFL segment, is Michigan just makes it easier for you. It's pretty simple. Is Davis Warren in football game? If the answer is yes, the
Run.
quarterback's not going to run. If Alex Orji is in football game, he is going to run. And multiple times Michigan did that, where on a 3rd and 3, they'd bring in Alex Orji with their little stupid change-up package.
Yeah.
Come on, buddy, in order for it to be a change-up, sometimes you have to throw it. You cannot bring the same guy in to do the same exact thing every single time and expect to catch a defense off guard. And again, I'm going to get into this because there's a team in the NFL which pathetic performance from them. But let's get to the Michigan struggles. Texas,
Yeah.
last sentence, sorry. Texas looks like absolutely the second or third best team in America. They've absolutely jumped Oregon for that kind of spot of it's now Georgia, OSU, and Texas in the national title conversation. It's not Georgia, OSU, and Oregon as it was
Yeah.
in the preseason. So let's get to the Michigan struggles, because there are absolutely valid concerns, criticisms, and talking points.
Yeah, I think like well, I'll go easy on the defense because you gave up 31 points to one of the best offenses in the country. And like you said, well, I don't necessarily think they're the same thing as last year. They're going to keep this team and possibly steal a game they probably shouldn't win, to be honest. The real problems are on the offensive side of the ball. And it's easy. It starts with the quarterback position. Neither guys are just, I mean, we sat there and complained about JJ McCarthy being this system guy and being this whatever, but at least he was competent, a competent college quarterback. You need that on any team at the college level. And Davis Warren is, I'm sorry, not that, and has not proven to be that through two games. But it doesn't help when you lose your entire offensive line, basically, and they've been kind of that unit and that bully ball for the last 3 seasons, and it's just not the same group anymore. And I think you kind of gotta refresh off of that. And the one thing I'm very like surprised about, and it'll be interesting to see if they continue to struggle if this moves forward. Why is Sherrone Moore still not calling the plays? He was the offensive coordinator on a team that won a national championship last year. And because he's the head coach, I know there's more responsibility. He gave off play calling duties to, I don't even know what the guy's name is, a real offensive coordinator. But I just didn't understand that. I don't understand that. And I think that's been, like you said, it's been so simplified to the Davis Warren is going to throw it and the Alex Orji is going to run it thing. Why not go back to calling plays, Sherrone Moore?
Yeah, I actually didn't know he wasn't calling plays, or that he'd relinquished the duties. That's a completely valid point. You mentioned maybe the things that Michigan lost. They also lost their best running back, and it turns out that the one that is
Yeah.
left, or the one that was left, absolutely sucks. It seems
Was
like
never good, apparently.
yeah. I mean, and then to be fair, you also kind of you lost Roman Wilson and Cornelius Johnson.
Yeah.
What kind of playmakers were they really? I don't know. They were still NFL players, question mark on the Cornelius Johnson one, but Roman Wilson was a good enough draft pick. I think the last thing, and this is not like this would have changed the game, but did you see the video of Colston Loveland just dropping the football?
No.
So he catches the pass, turns around, and just loses it. And just gives the ball back to Texas. I think the turnover battle at the end was -2, because obviously there was an ugly interception, and it just wasn't a pretty performance. You mentioned the defense; it is absolutely good enough, and we're not going to sit here and flame them for giving up 31 to this Texas team, especially when the offense doesn't help you out. This defense is absolutely good enough to stay in every game against average offenses. And that's why I don't really think it's a quote unquote cause for concern, because this team still can go 8-4, and that's probably what they would have been anyway. And now I guess if you sat there and you thought that, oh, it's the reigning champs and we should be 12-0 playoffs, then yeah, you can say cause for concern, but I'll turn around and say you're a fucking idiot for thinking Michigan was going to be that good to begin with. And I know
I
that's
think a
not
lot of
you.
people did, even outside of the Big Ten, though.
I know it's not you. I'm just saying, like, to anyone who was like, yeah, we're living in a dreamland, if that's what they really believed Michigan would be after losing as much as they lost. So I can't sit here and really indict them and act like they've completely lost the cabin pressure. Also, sorry, something just flew over my house and it seemed like it was very low. I wish my curtains weren't closed. I would have been able to see it. But yeah, that's the Michigan thing.
I
Let's
guess we'll go to the next biggest loser of the week. Probably the biggest loser, who we called
definitely.
the biggest winner last week. And they did it again. We said they don't win those types of games in week one, but what do? They lose these types of games. And now they're one loss away from not being in the college football playoff, in my opinion. That's Notre Dame. They lose to, and I almost said FIU, NIU, 16-14. A shocker. Maxion is back. And they went in there and, quite frankly, shut them down. A team that this off is the offense in Notre Dame a problem? I mean, they've scored a combined 41 points in two games. That's not exactly, sorry, that's 37 points in two games. That's not exactly a world-stopping number. They were awful on Saturday. They weren't really amazing against Texas A&M either. I know that's a tough environment, but to go out in your home opener and to lose to a MAC team with this schedule, they have to win out.
I agree completely. And also, like you said, how you started this, it's funny. 1 week after we say this team has clinched a playoff spot because the rest of their schedule is cake, they go out and do this against Northern Illinois. I didn't watch 97% of this game. I tuned in for the last pretty
Didn't
much
watch a single play.
game. I turned in for like the last like in-game minute. And there's actually something I want to talk about, which was insane to me. But going off some box score watching, I think Riley Leonard threw two interceptions. Kind of like Michigan. If you're minus two in the turnover department, it's going to be tough to win football games. Now, granted, against Northern Illinois, you should have enough talent to be able to overcome that. They didn't. And now let's get to the thing that I saw, which was wild to me. So, as always, the referees are instructed to help the bigger brand, the bigger team, and in most cases, Notre Dame. So, what I mean by that is on the last drive that Northern Illinois had the ball, they have a 3rd and 2 at like somewhere in the 20-yard line because it was a pretty simple kick at the end. They run the ball because obviously they want to burn some clock and burn Notre Dame's last time out. They run the ball and get the first down by 1.5 yards, or so everybody thought, because in comes this waddling penguin cheeseburger zebra of a human being and marks him 0.5 yards short. There was genuinely a 2 yard difference between where the receiver or where the running back ended up down and where they spotted him. They do some Mickey Mouse half-assed review where they look at 4 seconds of a terrible angle, and they're like, "Oh, play stands, 4th and inches. No, Northern Illinois, you can go for the ball, go for it, but you should probably kick because you're down." And Notre Dame gets the ball back when they had no business getting the ball back. They were gifted a chance to come back and kick a field goal at the end where they line up for a 60-yarder just because they kind of ran out of time and ran out of place to kind of get themselves closer. But it was pathetic. As always, gotta help the big guy, gotta help the brand because we want to put the Golden Dome in the tournament so we can get some money. It was a joke that Notre Dame got the ball back with a chance to win that game. So stupid.
And I'm not going to go through the schedule because we did last week, but you essentially Georgia Tech no longer ranked. They lose this week. Florida State was not going to be ranked. We know that. They don't play a single ranked team the rest of the season, besides possibly Louisville, who's in the high 20s right now.
Don't they play USC at the end of every season?
Oh, correct. They do play USC. Okay, two ranked teams. Possibility of two ranked teams, but with USC's gauntlet, you never know either.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So, poof. It's just so Notre Dame. And I know I talked about how I kind of believe in the message that like Marcus Freeman sets for this team, but Man, he loses the stinker to Marshall in his first year at home. Now he's lost this game at home. It's a bad precedent to start in your first 3 years at Notre Dame, to start losing these games early in the season at home. When these are gimmies, these should be gimmies for you.
Yeah, I guess the one thing that maybe I'm sitting here thinking about, and this is, I'm not going to be able to like find some evidence that this is something real, but maybe it's time for Notre Dame to recruit an actual quarterback and stop just playing, oh, give me the
Yeah,
ACC
old
fifth-year
man
guy
roulette.
who's not old or is not good enough to get to the NFL and he just wants to stay in college for another year.
Yeah.
Stop playing with the Riley Leonards. I think it was Sam Hartman the year before. Just
Yep.
recruit a quarterback and build with him instead of just going to get someone else's sloppy seconds for a grad transfer. Stop doing
Yeah,
that.
that's a good point. In college, those are the big stories. As far as other winners, I wrote down of the week. I wrote down Tennessee. They get the big win over NC State, who kind of looks awful, but the way they did it, 51-10, dominant. That Nico kid looks like he's here to stay. He's only going to get better. Other winners, Illinois with the upset in Kansas. Buddy told me not even to mention it, but I'm going to mention it. And that's kind of it for winners. Losers, the only ones I had, and they weren't, obviously Notre Dame is number one, Michigan number two. I did write down Penn State. They kind of put on a stinker that I watched. They got absolutely ran through in the first half by Bowling Green. I believe it was 27-20 Bowling Green at half. And then it was kind of all Penn State in the second half. It was 14-0 in the second half. Still only win by a touchdown to Bowling Green. I've heard Bowling Green's offense is like known to be bad too, that it was that surprising. It's interesting because it's a Penn State team that looks like they might have a good offense for once and a bad defense, which is a little against their grain. The other one I wrote down, as far as winners, is Iowa State. They go on the road and beat Iowa. I don't know why they play a rivalry game so early in the season. I know that's Big Ten plays right up until the end, but still put that on rivalry week. And then the other loser I wanted to talk about, where to go? Oh, Oregon puts up another stinker against Boise State, 37-34. That's two stinkers in a row. Boise State is a team that's been talked about it as getting that group of five spots, so maybe not so hard on them, but two stinkers in a row for a team that was supposed to be in that group of three as far as the three best teams in the country.
Yeah, I'll very quickly talk about Boise State because we talk about Heisman hopeful with I was about to say the guy's name, but with Quinn Ewers, you have to mention probably so far the best non-quarterback or maybe even just the best player outright in the country.
He's sick.
Ashton Jeanty.
Yeah.
He is sensational. He kind of seems like a total package from a running back standpoint. And he did as much as he possibly could to kind of win that game for Boise State. I don't know if you saw maybe how Oregon got back into the game at the end. It was pretty much a punt return touchdown and a kick return touchdown for 14 of those points in the second half to be able to kind of overturn the deficit. So by no means, like, not only did they play bad, like, it was special teams that got it done, and very rarely is that going to win you consistent football games. So
yeah.
Oregon looks ugly. You talk about Tennessee, the Nico kid. He looks super, super fun. And the point I wanted to make earlier was how much of that is how much fun he actually is and how good he is, and how much of that is Josh Heupel's offense, because this is now two, three, four quarterbacks in a row with Josh Heupel who always seem to go nuclear.
Yeah. It's a gun running gun, like heavy, like, but you gotta like, maybe
still
that's
got to make the
maybe,
throws. I agree.
He's got to make the throws, and like, good on, to me, that's like, how much of that is Nico, or how much is Keuchel? Like, Keuchel's just that good.
So last thing I want to say before I think I'm kind of good with the college slate or the college portion of this is this. You know, some of those losers you mentioned, they're on the Michigan State football schedule. How about 9-3? How about 9-3?
Or you're talking about one of those is Oregon.
I was talking
one is
Iowa and
Iowa.
Michigan. I was talking more mostly Iowa and Michigan. But you know what? Oregon looks like shit too, by their standards, of course, not by our standards.
In Charles is not going to be able to score against Michigan is the problem.
Hey man, it's a rivalry game. Anything can happen.
I understand that, and you're not to kind of talk me into it. But
listen, let me tell you, I've seen worse Michigan State teams go into the big house and win. That's all I'll say.
Let's move to the NFL. We'll start with the hometown team like we usually do. The Lions, kind of the story, maybe not the story. There's definitely bigger stories I look at now that I'm looking at it and kind of going back and remembering my thoughts from Sunday. But the Lions get the overtime victory on Sunday night. I don't know. It's a game, but this, I almost said program, but this Dan Campbell regime has proven that they win, that they go out and win. Times are its toughest when you haven't looked great in the second half, when Cooper's Kupp is catching 14 balls in the game, even though the Rams are on their 17th string offensive lineman, you find a way to win. You get it to overtime with the field goal, and then you go down and you stick it down their throat, old man physical style. The O-line didn't look great for most of the game compared to what they should be, is probably a top three offensive line in football, but they sure as hell did in overtime. You have guys that come out of the woodworks. Everyone talks about how you lose Reynolds. You lose these guys on offense. There's no wide receiver depth. Who comes out and takes a huge step in game one? A guy we've been super critical of, Jameson Williams, over 100 yards. It's something that the Dan Campbell regime now does. It's a playoff team. I looked at the schedule and I was like, because I remember who I was sitting with watching at the time. We're like, this is a playoff team we're doing this to, and the Rams, and they definitely will be. I think the Rams are a very solid football team this year. But I looked at the schedule and saw, holy crap, every other week is essentially a playoff team. There are more playoff teams than not playoff teams on this schedule. So you're going to have to go out and do this every week. To go out and do it on prime time is just what this Dan Campbell regime proves that they're going to do. And it builds a lot of trust as a fan, I think, moving forward in these games, that they have proven that they're going to win it with this regime, with Jared Goff, with Dan Campbell, Ben Johnson calling plays. And honestly, a defense that somewhat improved in my mind, despite kind of getting torn up there from a good chunk of that second half. I'll let you get into the more nitty gritty, but those are my general thoughts on the win and what it meant.
Yeah, I'll just start by saying a win is a win in the National Football League. There is no style points. It is, you either get a one or you get a one on the other side, or if you're really unlucky, you get a one on the even farther side and it's a tie. But a win's a win. You take it and you run, and you don't apologize to anybody. We didn't play our best game. And I would say that the Rams, given their limited resources, I do have to emphasize that, given their limited resources, did play their best game. You mentioned Cooper Kupp and Matthew Stafford kind of just playing backyard football, where it was Cooper, you do this, everyone else go condition, I'll get the ball out to you in about 0.3 seconds because I need to or else I'm dead. They lose Puka Nacua halfway through the game to a knee injury.
Yeah.
He's now on IR. You talk about the offensive lineman. They went into that game with their, I think their starting right tackle out. They lose.
And a guard.
Yeah, they lose another tackle. They lose another guy. At one point, I'm sitting there and I'm listening and I'm watching. And it's like, oh, here comes AJ Arcuri. And I'm like, him? He's in the league? He's on an active roster? And like, obviously, for those who are listening who don't know, former Michigan State guy, could never stay healthy, if I remember correctly. And I was just like, I heard that name and I was like, what? This guy's in the league? So, yeah, I mean, the cupboard was very, very bare for the Rams, and they gave us everything they had. They, like you said, that is a playoff team. They're only going to get healthier. They're only going to get better on the defensive side with their younger players. But you go and you beat them. And the way you did it, you mentioned, is perfect. It's the type of football that gives you confidence, especially as you get farther into the season. If you have to go play outdoors games, that type of football travels, that type of football wins, where you can sit there, line up 7 of 8 plays. The defense knows what you're going to do and they can't do anything about it. Where, I mean, you're watching those plays in the overtime. David Montgomery's 5 yards down the field before he's touched, and there's a guard in front of him. He's still behind a blocker. It was beautiful. It's the kind of football that your grandparents would watch and say, yeah. It was sensational. You talk about Jameson Williams, massive step, massive kind of showcase. And to me, the only thing I'll say is, as critical as have as critical as I have been on him in the first couple of years, I think part of my annoyance was also with the way he was used, especially after the injury was gone, where they just sat there and treated him like some sixth round track star gadget player and would just try and manufacture a touch and a half a game for him. Let him run real routes. He's a damn good football player. He's an incredible footballer. Let him run real routes, and you saw what happens when they do. You saw what he can do with the hands. You saw what he can do after the catch. You saw just the, it was beautiful. The defense, a lot of pressures on Stafford, not a lot of sacking Stafford, but again, when he gets it out as quickly as he did, what are you supposed to do? I think I was listening to Campbell. He had a great quote. You could have put up middle school tackles and we still wouldn't have tackled him because he was getting it out so quickly. Invalid. So that was beautiful. I think our offense started slow. And that's just kind of what week one typically is. This is not really limited to the Detroit Lions. Offenses typically start slower because the preseason, even though the starters quote unquote play, you're running dumbed down concepts. You're probably not going at full strength because you're just trying to make sure you're healthy going into the season. And so I fully expect it to pick up some uncharacteristic throws from Goff. That
Yeah, I was going to
just
mention
as
that.
long as we don't make that a habit, I'm not going to sit here and be concerned that he threw a pick and then he probably should have thrown a second one if the guy doesn't drop it. Just obviously clean it up, see a little better, figure it out.
With Amon-Ra having a bad game, I'll add that he was kind of a non-factor.
No, and again, that's what makes it even better is this team is unlocking new ways to win football games. Before it was Amon-Ra needs to catch 10, 12 passes a game. The rest of the team will supplement him, and then the run game will take us home. Now you're finding out that Sam Laporta didn't have a great game. He
No,
kind
he
of
didn't.
he played a little bit of the ghost game. The where is Sam Laporta? He wasn't great. I mean, on the defensive side, I think especially at the beginning, you still had corners kind of getting lost. They are younger, newer pieces, so maybe this gets better as well. I think Anzalone had a sensational game. That dude everywhere.
So did Brian Branch.
Yep. So I think overall you didn't play your best game. You got the win, and it's only going to go up. I mean, that's a perfect Sunday by NFL standards.
Yeah, definitely. Moving on to the rest of the league. Biggest storylines, I'll go Thursday night. I think definitely you had the AFC Championship rematch. An odd game. I mean, I feel like the Chiefs, obviously the ending. I didn't stay up for the ending, so I'll let you go into that because I think that's the most important storyline from this one. But in a game where the Chiefs just another one, they find a way to win. Kelce, mostly a non-factor. What do you get? But what do you learn? Rashee Rice is really good. You learn Xavier Worthy is a stud, and he's very, very fast. You learn Pacheco still got it. They've got tools, and that was scary to me, the way they won that game, the way they looked on offense, because this team is better than last year, and last year's team won a Super Bowl.
I actually won't be able to give you too much because I was on a plane and then we were driving down to Florida Thursday night. So I actually only caught the last drive that the Ravens had where they get down to the Kansas City 10 and you think, oh my God, we're looking at overtime. Or maybe as when you saw the video of John Harbaugh after the likely potential or the likely touchdown. I'm really sorry for that stupid wordplay. I'm gonna show myself the door. But you saw Harbaugh putting two fingers up. They wanted to go for the win. They wanted no part of overtime against the Chiefs, and they were gonna try it. Obviously, it comes down and Lamar at one point missed Zay Flowers. It was ugly. It was rather unfortunate because he was wide open. Lamar just kind of sailed him a bit. The very next play is the Isaiah Likely catch. Oh my God, the booth comes down and says his foot's on the line. No touchdown. Fourth down. And just didn't work. I don't really have much more to say about that game again, just because it was a little unfortunate. That was kind of my travel day.
Other big storylines. I had Patriots beat the Bengals. Probably the biggest surprise of the week as far as upsets. I actually you see that game and you watch that Patriots defense and you go, this team is not the Panthers. They're going to be able with Jacoby Brissett to, I think, steal a couple of these. and be at least mildly competitive with that defense. On the other end, though, Burrow looks really, really bad. He looks like he has no chemistry with the guy he's played with forever. And Jamar, I know T. Higgins is out, but just a sloppy, sloppy game for them. And I'll be honest, this is a non-football thing. When you're sucking and you're sitting on the sidelines with the bleached hair, it's not a good look. It makes.
Yeah, I've always said it with like football uniforms. You don't get to wear the sexy uniforms if your team's bad. Same with you don't get to bleach your hair and play like shit.
Yeah.
You better be LSU Joe if you're going to be doing that. I
If they
actually,
lose to the Chiefs next week, Frosted Tip time at the
yeah.
very least, cut that thing.
I actually thought the bigger takeaway was the Bengals from that aspect because, like you said, the Patriots. They've got some playmakers on defense even after losing Matthew Judon. I don't know if you watched Christian Gonzalez cover Ja'Marr Chase, but he had him on an absolute deserted island. Ja'Marr
Yeah.
Chase was complete. I mean, I know he put up some stats, but that was not when Christian Gonzalez was there. And Christian Gonzalez was great at the beginning of last year too, before I think he tore his pec or whatever injury it was that put him out for the season. He's a fantastic, fantastic young corner, kind of a great building block for that defense. The game plan was kind of ugly. I think the Patriots ran it like 47 or 45 times.
Yeah.
Mark D'Antonio's wet dream of, oh, if we can run it that many times, we'll win the football game. But they did what they needed to do to win a game. So kudos to them. But on the Bengals side, you mentioned the kind of some of the ugliness from Burrow and Chase specifically, just because those are the boys, those are their friends, the guys who played together. The T. Higgins thing. And obviously, you can never prove this, but is he actually hurt? Or I don't have a contract. I don't want to play.
Yeah, both of them.
So yeah, the Bengals are kind of in a they're in a
Weird
bit of a
spot.
pickle because it when you ske or not when you when you schedule, but when you come out and you see your schedule has the New England Patriots on it in this 2024, you kind of circle that as a win. Like you can't do that in the NFL because these
Yeah.
teams are all relatively close together, but you better be winning that game if you're a team that wants to have meaningful January football. So that they're going to have a lot to figure out, and they've put themselves already in an awful or in an awfully tough division in an awfully tough conference. They've already put themselves behind the eight ball. Now they're going to have
Yeah.
to win some tougher games against better opponents just to put themselves back on the right side of it. So
I will say this, they always start slow.
they do. They do.
Other storylines I had was rookie quarterbacks sucking. Caleb Williams gets his win, pulls one out against a bad Tennessee
That
team.
wasn't his win. That was the defense's
Was the
win.
defense's win. He throws for, I think, 90 something yards and 9 for 19 or something like that. Awful. The Commanders with Jaden Daniels, they get absolutely shit on. I actually think he might have looked like the best of the rookie quarterbacks. But
And he wasn't great.
yeah, and he wasn't good. That was with multiple turnovers. Bo Nix, Bo Nix, I'm going to call the next Jameis Winston. If you watch him play, it's boom or bust. He likes to make the silliest throws ever. And when he throws an interception, it's an interception. It's a bad interception. And that's kind of what it seemed like his MO is going to be this season. He also put up some points, I guess 20, I'm looking at it, but they were kind of always out of that game. They were
It
kind of
was
just kind
yeah,
of in
it was always gar not always, but it was always the oh, we're down three scores, now we're down two scores, now we're down three scores. It was, you said it wasn't a close football game, and let's say they just pulled away at the end. So I agree completely. The one thing I want to talk about, and the only reason I'm going to do it is because I got stuck on an airplane and I had to watch these guys.
Oh
And
man, take it
you
easy on us.
shut up. You're not even a real fan. You're a former fan. You've upgraded. But so you always hear about how bad the Giants are. You always hear about how bad the offensive line is. You always hear about how bad Daniel Jones is. Very rarely do you get to enjoy the misery of watching how bad that football team is. So, for those who don't know, I'm coming back from Florida on the plane. Perfect flight time. It was like from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. on the plane. So I just turned on the live TV and I was like, oh, let's see what Fox and CBS give me. Fox or CBS gave me a bunch of commercials for beauty products. And I was like, all right, let's try Fox. Fox gave me a football game. So I watched the football game. And the Giants made the Vikings, who are, I don't think, a good football team. They are a promising team for the future, but not a good one right now. They made a below average looking team look like the prime San Francisco 49ers. I mean, that offensive line cannot block for shit. Daniel Jones has no pocket awareness to go along with the fact that the line can't block for shit. Daniel Jones has no ability to read a defense or even read a play. He's told this is your first read, and he stares his receiver down, and he gets interceptions because of it. It was so ugly to watch, and it just kind of makes me truly appreciate where the Lions are at right now, because that used to be us. And honestly, I'll actually make a different proclamation. We were never that bad. We just found stupid ways to lose games. Like, this team wasn't
I mean,
ever.
what are we talking? What era are we talking about?
Okay, I'm not going to go back to 0-16 and
Okay.
try and analytically look at that team, considering I was an 8-year-old for that season.
Okay.
But but it's just they're horrific. And you kind of made the joke earlier, the future Quinn Ewers led Giants. I could absolutely see it happening, because I'm not really sure how this team wins a game unless they
It
beat
cost
them.
Brian Daboll his job too, and I don't think he's that bad of a coach.
Yeah, but hey, if it gets you Bill Belichick, you do it.
Yeah, true. I had two other things I wanted to mention as far as NFL. The first was Jordan Love. He goes down at the end of their game Friday. What a stupid! I know that they usually do two Monday nights, and this is actually better to have Thursday, Friday, college, Sunday, Monday. But just why? Why are we going to Brazil? I kind of made the point Saturday, like, isn't the game big enough that we don't have to go to Brazil to do this, in my opinion? But whatever. That's just me ranting at nothing. Eagles end up pulling that game out. Jordan Love on the last kind of drive there gets injured. He's out for now 3 weeks. It's only going to be he looked like the real deal though when playing again. I hate to say it, like, he might actually be good. You might actually have been worth spending $50 million on. Jalen Hurts, on the other hand, they get the win. They scored 34 points. He's back to Mr. Inconsistency for me. He made some absolutely brutal throws in that game, but he also made some great ones. I think of the long touchdown to AJ Brown. He made some good throws to DeVonta Smith, and Saquon Barkley in the mix there is pretty sick. He goes off for three touchdowns. The other one, which I think is where we're going to spend the bulk of the rest of the time, is the Cowboys and the Browns.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it starts off Dak Prescott gets a Shohei Ohtani contract right before this game, and they did it perfectly. You know why they did it perfectly? Before anyone could ever complain about this contract, they went out there and they beat the Browns, who has the quarterback on the worst contract in the history of contract law since the 1600s, since consideration and mutual assent were a thing, meeting of the minds, bargain of the bargain for bargain, worst contract ever. And now you can look at you're a Cowboys fan, you look and you go, well, at least we don't have that contract, even though you're paying this guy Shohei Ohtani money to be the 10th best quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I guess just to kind of continue the joke, who do you think lost out more on a trade or a transaction? The Cleveland Browns with Deshaun Watson, or the French when they sold Louisiana to the United States 250 years ago?
That might be, I'd have to do the breakdown of 1850s dollars to now, but yeah, it's we're talking about all-time bad trades, and not just sports, but life.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, you want to talk about the financials really quick? He's still on the hook for 170 million guaranteed, so you can't move him for 3 years. He looks like he doesn't want to play out there. He kind of looks like a guy who's kind of resigned to the fact that, you know what, everybody hates me. I'm guaranteed my money. What the fuck do I care? I'm just gonna go sexually assault more women.
I think he knows, like, he's not the same player, and with all the shit and that everybody hates him, kind of rightfully so, he seems like a pretty terrible person. That he's just like,
He's checked out because his money's guaranteed.
And obviously another sexual assault charge came out the Monday after the game. So we'll see where that goes as far as is he even going to be allowed to play the rest of the
Well,
season.
they already said they're not going to put him on the exempt list, so he is.
Okay.
Which is wild, but
yeah.
So I have actually two more things that I want to talk about, and
Okay.
one of them's a one play highlight. Did you see Anthony Richardson's off the back foot 68 air yard throw to Alec Pierce?
Yeah.
That's one
But
of
are we
the
also he's interesting. He as we're talking about Boomer Bust, who are we talking about Boomer Buster? I talked about Jalen Hurts, and who was the college guy I talked about was Boomer Bust today. I don't remember, but this is the ultimate Boomer Bust.
Oh,
He can
yeah.
run. He's a big body. The arm is amazing. He runs like a stallion, but oh my gosh, is he inconsistent? 9 incompletions, I think, as well today. Where was that?
Hold on. So his box score was 9 of 19. I know you
Yeah.
mentioned that earlier, and I think maybe that's what you were looking at. He was 9 of 19, and one of those 9 completions, like I said, for anyone who didn't see this, please Google it. So he's in the pocket. He slips. So he's on his back foot and he launches a football 68 yards in the air, not 20 yards, and the receiver takes another 40 with a yak. 68 in the air yards to Alec Pierce in
Yeah.
stride. In stride. It was outrageous. I mean, I remember saying this about him in the draft last season. He's the most physically gifted quarterback ever, between all, when you take all things into account. He's got the body of Josh Allen, the speed of a, let's say, a slight,
Lamar.
oh yeah, so he's got the speed of a slightly slower Lamar with that 4.440. He's got the arm of a, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but he's got the arm cannon of a Joe Milton. And now it's just going to be about, can
On.
he put together.
We were talking about Lamar and Josh Allen, and then you throw Joe Milton as
Okay,
your
but
arm cannon.
I'm talking specifically about Joe Milton's arm, not about Joe Milton's ability to process a football game,
Okay.
because those are two different things. But it's just, if he finds a way to put it together, it's going to be the most unicorn-like thing that we've ever seen.
The problem,
He's
I don't
going
know
to
if
have.
you watch the clips I saw though, is he has no fear after being like injured all last year.
Yep.
He's taking every hit in
Oh, yeah.
America.
Yeah, he's built like a linebacker. To hell with
Yeah.
it. I'll go run over the other linebacker. I'm probably bigger than him, is probably what he's thinking. I love it. I hope he figures it out, because obviously 9 of 19, that's not going to keep you in the NFL for very long. And at some point, people are going to get tired of the one-off bombs if it comes with ugly throws as well, which is what he has. But on the flip side, he started like 20 games in his whole career. So that goes
Yeah.
back to Florida too. He's only
Yeah.
22. I actually think he's one of the youngest, if not the youngest, starting quarterback in football still. That includes this year's class of rookies, because JJ McCarthy's not starting. So I think it's sensational. We'll see what happens. And the last thing that I want to say, because I kind of vehemently was talking about Michigan, kind of showing their signs, if you will. Did you see what happened with the Falcons and Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, he was bad. He was kind of bad on Sunday.
So he was bad, but let me just preface this with, maybe this was just game script, because TJ Watt is the most, or is the best.
Oh,
Like,
yeah.
maybe they just wanted to say, you know what, screw it. We're going to pre-plan everything, and we're going to try and limit TJ Watt's ability to kill us. And they didn't do a very good job of it. TJ Watt put up multiple sacks and still had, I think, 2 forced fumbles and 3 sacks overturned by defensive penalties. He could have had an absolute box office first game statistic wise, and he still did that with those being taken away. But where I'm going with this is, I don't know if Kirk Cousins can move. So the Falcons were in pistol or shotgun for 96% of their offensive snaps. That does not work in the NFL. You can't. This is not the West Coast college offense against a bunch of armies, navies, and
Especially
New
with Kirk
Mexico.
Cousins.
What?
Especially with Kirk Cousins.
Oh,
We're
yeah.
not talking about Lamar Jackson
Yeah.
back there.
Yep. It doesn't work that way. Not only that, you have Bijan Robinson. The play action's supposed to be one of your better tools for getting the ball to your receivers, because you have a credible threat on the ground. Now, with that said, beyond the fact that they had to limit the way they started their offensive sets, in the 22 shotgun snaps, there were 0 runs. Zero. In the 26 pistol snaps, there were 22 runs. So you want to talk about Alex Orji coming in and tipping the defense of what's happening? Look at Kirk Cousins. Okay, is Bijan Robinson next to him or is Bijan Robinson behind him? Okay, now we've got our safeties creeping in. Now we're going to put 9 in the box because we know you're going to run the football.
Two
Now,
knuckleheads not knowing X and O's already figured out the scheme for the Falcons after one game. Wow. Could you
yeah,
imagine
look.
what the tape says?
No, look, I'm going to preface this. Maybe it was a game script thing. Maybe they wanted to sit here and find a way to limit TJ Watt. If that was the case, they didn't do a very good job of it. But where I was going to go with this is if Kirk Cousins is really that banged up, Michael Penix is going to be playing a lot sooner than anybody thought.
Yeah. Good
And maybe
point.
it won't be a bad pick. So that was kind of the last couple things that don't really involve specific maybe games, more of just what I saw. Anything else?
That's kind of it. I mean, Aaron Rodgers survived on Monday night. He got through the game.
Yeah. Good
He,
for him.
speaking of guys who don't look like they can really move, the arm is still there for sure. It's
Oh yeah.
just he's not the same scrambler he was 10 years ago now, especially coming off an Achilles.
Yep. Yeah, so I've got no more from here. I think we got a solid hour and I'm kind of been glad that we're back to the being able to hit on both professional and now semi-professional football. And I'm actually going to end this with a very rare double. Go Lions and go Green. Both of our teams get a win on the same weekend for what is probably the first time in a while.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan State 42 point favorites, and Lions are a 7 point favorite. I saw that number and was a bit surprised at how high that was. But two winnable games, go on and get them.